Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be angrily talking baseball. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Unfortunately, the season is over, but that should not stop you from heading on over to icehogs.com, checking out the season ticket packages, buying yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, I am not even going to ask how you're doing because I have watched baseball all this week and I'm looking outside at the weather. So I feel like I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, Memorial Day weekend was good overall. Baseball was not. This past week, watching this Cubs team, the amount of just pure frustration watching every game, watching Cubs starters struggle to go 5-6 innings again, watching every single batted ball from the opposition finding grass, guys slumping, it's just, oh, it's been frustrating.
Yeah, both sides of town, it's just been ugly baseball. And
yeah,
even when the Cubs have won over this past week, it hasn't been a pretty win. I mean, you know, the Wednesday game against Philadelphia, sure, you saw a lot of home runs, but it still wasn't a pretty game.
You know,
they made a game out of it. You know, so it just hasn't been good baseball. You're right. I think we all knew the bullpen was not the way that they had been playing. That was not a true representation of what this bullpen is. It was ceiling and the ebbs and flows of baseball. You're starting to see the cracks in the armor. The starting rotation has hit some bumps, and it's weird because usually, you know, you see they cycle. Everybody in the season goes through ups and downs. Every position player, every pitcher. I feel like this Cubs starting rotation has been going their ups and downs all in you know, one cycle. Like they're all in the same position at the same time. They started off bad at the beginning of the season. They all got better. Now they're all starting to have a rough patch. And it's frustrating because there's no one guy that just like, all right, I'm breaking out of this and I'm breaking the slump.
John Lester's been in a slump. Cole Hamels hasn't looked good all month, really. I mean, when you think about it, even some of the games where he was able to limit the damage, he has not looked nearly as good as he's had before. Jose Quintana didn't look all that great yesterday, though I will say he had a really nice start against Philadelphia yesterday. He just did not. Kyle Hendricks, he's been the weirdest one because Kyle Hendricks will start the game like perfect, dominating the first 4 or 5 innings, and then things just fall apart.
Yep.
And it's just weird. The other weird thing is, while the numbers may not look pretty, Darvish, I thought Darvish looked great against Philadelphia until, you know, freaking slow grounder up the middle to tie the game, then a freaking bloop triple that bounced over Hayward and went along the freaking wall. I thought Darvish was great in that game. And then, yeah, he gave up 6 runs on Saturday, but that was a day where most pitchers in the major leagues would have struggled. It was that classic wind blowing out game at Wrigley where you knew you almost needed double digit runs to win the game. And I give him credit for going into the 8th inning. The fact that he was able to hang in there and keep the team in the game in a day like that, I'll give him credit for that. But, you know, as a whole, this rotation, I'm seeing a lot of the problems we saw early last year. What are those problems? Nibbling, falling behind, and most importantly, not missing bats. Why is all this bad luck happening to the Cubs pitchers? It's because everyone is putting the ball in play. The more you put the ball in play, the more likely you're going to see some hits. The Cubs have given up a ridiculous amount of hits the past like week. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's like they're giving up 10 plus hits a game. Feels like every game going back at least a week, maybe more. But when you're not getting swings and misses, and you are falling behind in counts like you have been, you're going to see the ball put in play more. You're seeing more of the hits. Those bloopers, those slow grounders. Yeah, pitchers do rely on soft contact in a number of situations. But I just don't think they're getting enough swings and misses like they were a few weeks ago. I think there's something to be said about that.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, that was a huge problem last year. There's nobody on that staff that's really a swing and miss kind of guy.
Darvish is the most.
Darvish is the most, and he walks a lot of guys. So that's the issue. And, you know, you can get through it with your starting rotation, but you really need a swing and miss guy in your bullpen. You just need that. And they don't have it.
I watch so many games, so many Cubs games, and I watch their opponents. I feel like the Cubs are the only bullpen in baseball. Now, you know, I know this is probably over-exaggerating, but it truly feels like the Cubs are the only bullpen in baseball that doesn't have this plethora of 95-plus mile-an-hour flamethrowers. You don't have any of those types of guys. Sure, Edwards can throw hard, but he's got to throw strikes. The guys who could probably throw the hardest outside that are hurt. Strope, Morrow are hurt. Mike Montgomery doesn't throw hard. Steve Cishek doesn't throw hard. Brad Brock is usually low 90s, except that one time. They don't have a lot of flamethrowers, and those guys are... Steve Cishek can generate swings and misses, but if you have a lot of guys on contact, well, you look at successful bullpens, and you have big strikeout swing and miss guys in bullpens. You have power pitching. They don't have a lot of that in general.
No, and they need that. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says, and I don't care if you start throwing me the company line of, well, they've spent all the money on the baseball money that they have. They're not going to sign anybody. Once the draft comes, if they're not in there trying to get Craig Kimbrel, then they're saying that this season doesn't matter to them.
They need to do something. They need to do something. And look, you know, I am the main host of Climbing the Ivy, the fan-sided Cubby's Crib show. I was so pissed when I got home and I saw the Cubs blow that game against the Reds. I was so pissed that I logged on to Spreaker.com and recorded a 10-minute episode ranting about the bullpen. Every Cubs fan knew this bullpen was going to be a problem. Sure, I gave it credit when it pitched well a few weeks, but there have been way too many blown games. And they may not be statistically the worst bullpen in baseball, but they have way too many cracks on a team that is supposed to be competing for a World Series.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you. And I mean, you look, Monday, bullpen blew it. Tuesday, not a good bullpen session. Wednesday, Tyler Chatwood looked good. Thursday, you had bullpen did not look good. Friday, the bullpen, Cishek blew it. Saturday, another Chatwood saves the day. And then yesterday, just everybody looked bad. I mean, you had Caratini pitching.
Yeah, that was just, that was not good. I'm looking right now at Cubs starter stats the past 7 days. This is on Fangraphs. I don't think this includes today against the Astros. Probably won't until tomorrow, but we're talking yesterday's game against the Reds and a full week. Their K per nine through a lot of the season was like upper nines, tens, and it's gone down the past 7 days. It's been 8.92, which is about middle of the road, and their BABIP against is 380. So a lot more balls being put in play. The strikeouts are going down. The WAR is a 0.5. So is it, again, is it terrible? No, but it's not where this rotation was for many weeks. And we know on paper this rotation is very good. But like you said, right now, there's a lot of slumps going on. A lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's no... Typically, you see slumps staggered. So your fourth starter's slumping, but your one, two, and five are okay. And then once the four gets better, you know, somebody else starts going to slump. And you even itself out. What the Cubs are seeing is bottom barrel baseball, sky high baseball, bottom barrel baseball, sky high baseball. And it's a weird feeling. And this is not what a championship caliber team is supposed to feel like.
Well, it's kind of strange because, you know, on one hand you say to yourself, they're going to have some struggles. It's natural. You play 162 games. There's going to be struggles. What gets me is that you see a lot of lack of fundamentals at times, things that you would expect them to be better at. For example, you saw yesterday they had a guy picked off in a rundown and Daniel Descalso drops the ball. Today, you saw a throw to the plate go through Wilson Contreras' legs. It's those kinds of things. Sure, you're going to have some BABIP luck go against you. Sure, it's going to go for you sometimes. You're going to see slumps, heights, peaks. But when you see lack of fundamentals, that's no fluke. That is just not performing the basic things that need to be performed.
And it's weird, too, is what you've seen is when the pitching goes into a slump, you start seeing more errors. And I don't know if it's just the batted balls are putting the pressure on the fielders and then they're responding in kind, or if it's a situation where the pitching doesn't look as good because the fielding behind it is not good. I don't know if it's chicken and the egg or if it's just coincidence, but it's something we've seen all season long.
It's very interesting you brought that up. Because remember when Kyle Hendricks pitched that gem in Cincinnati?
Mm-hmm.
What happened in that game? Several great defensive plays. And that's when things were rolling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Starting pitching was still doing really good. We haven't seen that the past week. We've seen a lot more mental mistakes. It's very interesting you bring that up.
Yeah, it's just really weird. And I don't know if it's coincidental. I don't know if there's a cause correlation type thing, but it's just something that I've peripherally noticed, and I don't know how to pull stats for it, but it's just something that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, no, it is very interesting you bring that up. Another thing that I kind of wanted to bring up in this whole situation is I just want, like, I want to see everyone on this team be hot at once. Because look, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo are Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo again. And Wilson Contreras has been consistently good. Javi's been slumping a little bit lately, but, you know, that's going to happen. I'm not really worried about that. But you look at guys early on who are hot, Jason Hayward, Daniel Descalso, boy, have they fallen off. I wrote about that for Cubby's Crib the other day. Daniel Descalso's WRC plus, for any of those who look at statistics, is in the negatives, like the past month. It's in the negatives. Do you know how bad you have to be? I mean, remember when he was our most clutch hitter?
Yeah.
Jason Hayward, he's had a little bit of BABIP luck himself, but and he's still drawn some walks, but it's still, you don't see him driving the ball like he did in the first like month and a half, because he was driving the ball very well. So, you know, you're seeing some of those guys go in slumps. You're seeing also much improved play by Albert Almora. He's hitting for a lot more pop, which is nice. But with the injuries and some of the guys being out, it's hard for things to mesh. You know, people can be mad at Joe Maddon all they want. what are you supposed to do at this point when your bench right now is that guy you just called up from AAA, and you have one of your best pure hitters in Ben Zobrist is, you know, still out with the personal issues. Daniel Descalso is slumping very, very hard, and other guys are slumping very, very hard. And you have a really hot top of the order with Rizzo and Bryan up there. And, you know, Schwarber's not putting up necessarily the average, but he is drawing walks. He's having good at-bats. It's just, it's hard for everything to click right now when there's some missing pieces and some slumping pieces, even with your two most important pieces being red hot right now. Chemistry of baseball is very, you know, all over the place.
Yeah. And it's, you can, I'm a guy who is more than happy to throw the blame at Joe when blame deserves to be at Joe. I'm not one to pull punches with Joe, but you've got to do what you got to do. And yeah, I'm going to put this on, and I don't know exactly where it lies, so it's hard to throw blame, but it's somewhere between Theo and ownership. Is they did not give all the tools that this team needs to go out there and dominate for a whole season. Can this team win a World Series? Yes. No question about it. Is it going to be easy? No. This is not like the year that they won the World Series. This is a team that is a very flawed team. And in order to win, they can't just out-talent somebody. They're going to have all get hot at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, there were conversations when the Cubs were really hot because they had, like, won the most consecutive series in, you know, God knows how long. And it was more than the 2016 team did. Oh, excuse me. But here's the thing. You saw some great play during that time. You also saw a little bit of smoke and mirror work. But, I mean, you got to give most of the credit to the guys. I mean, the offense was really clicking and all that stuff. But, I mean, let's be real. The 2016 team is better. Even in the peak of what we saw from late April through mid-May, that 2016 team just steamrolled the competition. Everything went right that year. And even when it didn't go right, like a Schwarber injury, it was made right by him coming back in the World Series and hitting. So I never thought it was quite fair to compare him to the 2016 team. Yeah, you had some 2016 vibes at times and they were playing really well. But, I mean, that 2016 team was historically good.
It was absolutely very, very good team. And you're not going to recreate that, the luck, the sheer dominance. It's hard, but there's fundamental things that this team was lacking going into this season. And we talked about it, a true leadoff hitter. This team does not have one.
No, it does not.
The closest thing you have is Ben Zobrist, and he's not with you right now.
You don't even know if he's going to be back ever. I mean, we have no idea what's going on.
He might just walk away. The man has made enough money. He's done enough things. He's earned the right to walk away. If he walks away, what can he do? It's not outside the realm of possibility. So that's the closest thing you have to a leadoff hitter. So you knew going into the season you'd have a leadoff hitter. You knew going into the season that your closer is a guy with a injury history.
He might not be back.
He might not be back either. You had questions in your bullpen going into the season. And with all that, you went into the season and said, this is what we're doing. And they might bring in help at the trade deadline. I expect them to bring in some sort of the cavalry in the bullpen, but I don't expect them to bring in, a Wade Davis caliber.
You don't have the assets.
You don't have the assets because, you know, you look at what you gave up to get some of these – you know, ace bullpen arms. You just don't have that. You don't have the luxury of giving something up for it. You've gotten rid of, you know, most of what was in your cupboard. Now you're one of the bottom, you know, farm systems in baseball. You just don't have the assets to give up to get that. So sure, they'll probably bring in some, you know, just fresh arm. You know, that's hopefully turned like a Jesse Chavez, where they were really helpful to your team, but it was not something that nobody expected what they got out of Jesse Chavez when they traded for him. Nobody expected it.
No, that was a very big regression red light in the offseason, and I don't blame them for not re-signing him. I will say that.
Yeah, so you're going to bring in somebody like that where, you know, they don't have – you're not expecting a ton other than just bringing in a fresh arm, and hopefully that helps out. But, you know, realistically, your best shot of improving this bullpen is – a Craig Kimbrel, where you can, all it is money.
Yeah, no assets. But the scary thing about Kimbrel is he hasn't pitched since the postseason last year. So he's not just going to come in and dominate. But you figure if he gets time to work on things, I mean, can he be worse than some of the guys in the bullpen now?
Yeah, it's what do you have to lose?
Because, I mean, look, they just brought up Dylan Maples again, and you see the stuff that guy has, and it's electric. But he hasn't consistently shown the command to be there. The other thing, I'm trying to kind of make up my mind here. It's really hard. Part of me thinks Carl Edwards Jr., that whole thing just needs to end. But part of me is also like, look at all the good he's also done despite the bad. But something just doesn't seem right. And you can't experiment when you're in such a tight division. You got to be like, okay, we need guys we know will be consistently effective. Even with the track record Carl has, which, while not always promising, has a lot of good in it. While you see the stuff has been very good at times, you haven't consistently seen it. And if you have doubts and you're in a pennant race, do you really want to try to give him more confidence, or are you going to try to win ball games?
Yeah, this team does not have the luxury of you know, experimenting, or this is a tight race. It's going to be a tight race till the end. They don't have the cushion to try some things out. They've got to win every game. Every game counts.
Yeah, that's the other thing I kind of want to talk about this division is, look, we're 2-4 against the Reds already. We're 2-4 against them. And despite the fact that they're in last place, I think every baseball fan can agree they're at least better than what the record shows. I mean, you look at the run differential. You look at some of the games they've lost. They are not nearly as bad as they are, but I mean, the Cubs still have to beat them. The Cubs are still a better team, in my opinion, than the Reds. You just look and say, this division, there is no like easy saving grace games. The Pirates are competitive. They're really streaky, but they're still competitive. If you catch them at the right time or the wrong time, that can make a big difference. You know, you've seen what the Reds can do. And obviously the Brewers and the Cardinals are going to be in it, despite, you know, recent struggles from the Cardinals. It's not like a few years ago where you would just be like, all right, well, maybe we lost 2 or 3 against the Brewers, but we can make this right again by beating up a terrible Reds team or a bad Pirates team. You don't have that this year.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the Cubs too. So you have, you know, pitchers on the other side just show up and throw ace stuff. Garrett Cole today looked like the most dominant pitcher in baseball. His last start, he got rocked by the White Sox. He got outdueled by Ivan Nova.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was a little amped up too, the opponent.
Oh, yeah.
He might have been a little, because he was throwing 98, 99. I'm like, holy shit. I remember he never threw slow, but I never saw him throw 98, 99. I mean, I know him and the Cubs kind of a history, but, you know, and, you know, the one big loss by Gerrit Cole against the Cubs happened to be a playoff game. But other than that, Gerrit Cole's pretty much dominated the Cubs in his career.
Yeah. So it's just frustrating. You know, you got the split against Philadelphia, but it was a tough one. It was a tough,
could have easily been 3 or 4.
Yeah. It was just a tough series. Cincinnati has pretty much owned you all season.
And thank goodness they won that second game. They easily could have lost that one.
Yeah, the Cubs have had eke wins out against Cincinnati, and Cincinnati, when they win, are dominating. And it's just frustrating. Like, you know, when do you see the Cubs struggle against Cincinnati? They get the running joke is just always the Cubs. You know, it's like batting practice.
Yeah. It's Joey Votto's average raised like 30 or 40 points over the weekend. You had Eugenio Suarez batting like 500 in the series. It was like every Reds hitter was getting on base. It was insane. And Yasiel Puig was having a field day some of those games. You saw that offense struggle so mightily early. Now look, Joey Votto is probably the best pure hitter in baseball the past decade, but he was really struggling coming in. Eugenio Suarez is really, really good. Puig is good. But, I mean, that whole lineup up and down was just destroying them.
Yeah, it's so infuriating. It's so infuriating.
And you know what else is annoying is you watch that and you know Tom and Marty Brenneman are happy, and that never makes you happy as a Cubs fan.
Yeah, so anytime that they're happy, I'm not happy. I think that's just the crux of it.
And, you know, here's my thing about Tom Brenneman. I thought when I was a kid, I thought he was a great national broadcaster. I really actually enjoyed listening to him. And from what I know, Marty Brenneman in his prime was very good. But it seems like with the Brennemans, as time goes on and they kind of are like, okay, you're pretty much immortal in broadcasting, they just became so full of themselves and just such entitled whiners. That's the thing. If you listen to a modern day Tom Brenneman broadcast, he just moans and whines and complains the whole time. When I thought he used to be really good in his prime, I thought he was a very good broadcaster.
You know what is, to tell you the truth, is as Chicagoans, we've been really spoiled with absolutely ace fantastic announcers. From Harry Carey to Steve Stone to, you know, with the Blackhawks.
Pat Hughes.
Yeah, with the Blackhawks, the Cubs.
Jeff Joniak, you could go on. Yeah,
we have been absolutely blessed with, not only are they just fantastic, iconic, but they are super professional with how they deal with the content. Is sure, they're going to be biased towards their team, but it is biased in a really professional way. Mm-hmm. If you go to, it doesn't happen as much with football because it's a much more national sport, but hockey and baseball, if you start listening to most cities' local broadcasts, it is absolutely annoying.
Here in Chicago, let's face it. Stacey King is a total homer.
Yeah, but there's other sports where, you know, other cities where it's like, you know, they're just not very professional how they handle it. It's, you know, it's very, you know, we got a glimpse of it with Hawk. Is there's a lot of Hawks out there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Where it just Hawk is the black eye of Chicago broadcasting. You know, I can get where if that's your team, you know, you got in with Uncle Hawk, but like that's not professional how he handled things. He had the beef, you know, if there was if you got dominated by a team, it was personal beef with Hawk.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy. Yeah. That's the way it is with a lot of other cities. Maybe Stacy's the next most, but like most of the sports broadcasters in Chicago, you don't have that. You know, they might talk about, I don't like facing Garrett Cole because, you know, he ends up putting up his best start of the season anytime he plays the Cubs. Like, that's as much as you'll get outside of like a Hawk where like, oh, I'm gonna go down there and wait for Garrett Cole in the parking lot.
Yeah, yeah. That's why White Sox fans are very lucky now. They have Jason Benetti, who I think is fantastic.
Yeah, he's absolutely fantastic. And they've righted that ship. And Chicago has this expectation of this level of broadcasting. You go to especially smaller markets. You go to like a Nashville. You go to a Milwaukee. And I don't know if it's their expectation is somebody's got to be the biggest. Their broadcaster has to be the biggest cheerleader, the biggest homer. I don't know if that's the expectation, but you start seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those.
I don't know if it's like small man complex.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Something really to look into because I know there are a few other great announcing duos I know in other cities, but yeah, I mean, I think probably the best baseball announcing duo is San Francisco. You know those guys like Mike Kruko. Those are champs.
Yeah. That's another one of the major markets. Like if you look at the mid markets and the small markets, that's where you really start seeing it. You know, so
yeah, I think it's kind of one of those us versus the world.
You know, your Cincinnati's, your Columbus's, your, even St. Louis's, your Milwaukee's, your Green Bay's, those are the places where, you know, like they get their announcers get very, you know, old man shakes his fist at the cloud type, announcing. And it's just unnecessary. It's frustrating.
Yeah. You know, I don't really listen to a lot of other broadcasts often. I mean, I hear it on the highlights, so that's how I kind of know them. But, oftentimes I don't have to listen to it. And look, like I said, I really liked Tom Brenneman as a national guy when he was younger, but now he's kind of joining his dad as a bitter old man. It's like, look, I respect Marty and Tom Brenneman for their prime years and what they brought to the sport, but it's like, putting it as nice as I can, they're washed. That applies, right? They're washed.
Yeah. They hit that point where they became crotchety old men.
Right, and kind of entitled because they're like, well, we've been in the game so long, you know, Marty Brenneman's a Hall of Famer, so it's like he could say whatever he wants, and, you know, you get a lot of stuff that just kind of makes you roll your eyes. And I say, look, good on them for their careers, but, like, I'm kind of glad, like, Marty Brenneman's retiring. I think it was kind of time for him to retire the past 5 years.
Agreed.
Because like from the 70s to like the mid 2000s, you know, that was when he was in his prime. That's when he was doing a good job, and he gets elected to the Hall of Fame, and then, you know, just kind of went downhill from there. And I think Reds fans all really like Marty, but I know Reds fans who are kind of annoyed with Tom. They're like, yeah, his whining gets kind of old after a while. It's not like he's a dumb or bad. He just complains a lot. Get off my lawn, absolutely. Shake fist.
Get off my lawn. All right. So the schedule doesn't really get easier for the Cubs.
No.
You know, what's your expectation this coming week for the Cubs? You know, do you see them turning it around? Do you see them struggling? And if they turn it around, who's going to be the one that delivers, you know, the pitcher and or batter that's going to really bring this around?
Well, I think overall, first, my overall prediction is going to be they're not going to completely collapse or anything, but they're not going to get really hot. I just see them kind of continuing what they're doing, and that's treading water. That's kind of how I see it. But if there's somebody that I think is going to really help them kind of stay afloat, at least at the very least, I mean, Anthony Rizzo right now is absolutely on fire. So he's one of the guys. I also feel like Jason Hayward's going to bust out of it. You can laugh at me. You can. But I just have a feeling that if he's healthy, I know he got dinged up in that collision. But
We got to talk about that too.
Yeah, we do. If he does get healthy, and this is an if, he's going to break out of it.
I think Kyle Hendricks is gonna have an ace game.
Okay.
One of those 8-9 inning games. Gives up a solo home run and four hits over 8-9, and that's it. Really shuts down the other team. One of those games where as he goes, he just gets stronger and stronger. Around a 95 pitch performance and complete game type game. I think that's what you're going to get batting. Yeah. I think Rizzo is going to be the one that just continues. Cause he's really just scorching the ball. Like today, that home run was just,
oh, that was a mammoth shot.
Yeah. That was like a Babe Ruthian thing.
Yeah. Oh man. Think about today. If Kyle Schwarber's robbed hit fell in, we may be talking a little differently right now.
Well, I mean, even if we were talking a little differently, what game was it? Was it a Thursdays against Philadelphia where we almost came back and tied that game?
Oh, the strike call on Hayward that should have been ball four. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. And they just gave him a gift strike, where you had.
And then Hayward threw bad pitches, but.
Yeah, but Addison Russell sucked, but you had Tyler Chatwood go in there and bat, hit a double. Like, you could have won that game after being in a big hole. So there's a lot of places that they had the room to turn this around. But to be fair, there was also places where they lucked out and things, stayed the Cubs way and could have easily gone the other way in losses.
It's funny because you can look at the two Philly losses and say, we should have won those. You can look at the two Philly wins and say, we should have lost those. I mean, one of those, they were losing 2-1 in the ninth and they came back and won. The game-winning single was Javi Baez coming off that injury. I think that's another thing that, while I don't want to use it as a full-out excuse, I do feel like one of the things that maybe doesn't get talked about enough is the fact that this team is kind of banged up right now. When you think of it.
Yeah, and do we know the extent of what's going on? I mean, so we had yesterday the collision between Chris Bryant and Jason Hayward. And like, no matter what you have to say about Jason Hayward, he is a big man. A big man, and he's an absolutely fantastic athlete. And Chris Bryant is a big guy too, but he's not the frame of Jason Hayward. And
oh no, nowhere close.
And when you have that collision, you hope that Chris Bryant's okay. I mean, it looked more like a head injury than I was when it first saw it. I thought it was going to be a shoulder. And I was like, oh no, not that shoulder again. But it looked like head. I'm guessing that they probably are just checking him for concussion.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
That's my guess based. Cause watching it live, it didn't look like a head. It looked like the shoulder. But when I'm reading reports and seeing like a still, I'm like, okay, that's head. And I'm hoping it's just they're making sure that he's not concussed. And he went on this trip to Houston, which is a huge plus sign. Because if they had an indication that there was concussion, I don't know if baseball rules are like, but NFL rules, he couldn't travel. So yeah. the fact that he traveled is good. So I'm hoping.
I think they've pretty much cleared that.
Yeah. But it's a scary moment, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Because look, you've had that. Obviously, Jason Hayward was involved at that collision. Rizzo was out all those games with the back issue. Javi Baez had the ankle, the bruised ankle that he got against the Nationals.
Yeah, I don't know if it was ankle, heel, something. It was something with his foot.
Yeah, it was a contusion, so it wasn't serious, but he sat out a few more games than people initially thought would happen. Obviously, Pedro Strop has been out for weeks, and you have the Brandon Morrow situation, and you've had a lot of banged up guys. That's definitely part of it. It's not a full out excuse, but it's definitely a factor, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I thought you were shorthanded going into the season, and you have, and I guess you can throw the Ben Zobrist thing into, I guess, the injury camp just because he's not available to play. But yeah, you've got a lot of key injuries, and this is a sport where, you know, there's not as many injuries per se as hockey or football, but there's a lot more, you know, nicks and bruise type injuries that linger because it's such a grueling sport. You know, you play pretty much every single day or 6 days a week for months. You know, there's not a lot of days off, so you don't get time to heal. Like the NFL, sure, you get way more bangs and bruises, but you know, you get the better part of a week to heal up and rest and prepare. And you, baseball is just known out there the next day, out there the next day. And, you know, it's hard to recover from those. And that's why sometimes you'll see a guy have a dip in his season from a nagging injury. Hammy's a perfect one. You know, you get a guy with a slight hammy and just bam, you know, you lose the production for the most of the season. Chris Bryant's shoulder, you know, he played for most of the season, but man, he just wasn't the same guy.
I forgot to mention as well, this just came to me. Remember we talked about Daniel Descalso's struggles?
Yeah.
He had an injury too.
Yeah. So, you know, injuries in baseball go hand in hand a lot of times with struggles.
Yeah. It's something that we don't always realize can make a bigger effect than we think.
But you know, sort of Cubs related, and I wanted to take the time to really discuss this, but Bill Buckner passed away today.
Very surprised. When I saw it, I had to do a double take.
So he had complications to Lewy body dementia, and I didn't know he was sick.
Neither did I.
So it was a little bit surprising. But you know, most people remember him from his time with the Yankees, or you know, depending on how old you are, from the Dodgers. But did you know that he played in professional baseball games, MLB games, not minor league, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s?
A lot of people don't.
Yeah, that's incredible. I didn't know I just associated him mostly with his time with the Cubs, which was 77 to 84, because some of my earliest memories of baseball were Bill Buckner, because he, when I was real little, like my earliest memories of baseball, Bill Buckner was the best player on the Cubs.
Mm-hmm. I know they said the anniversary of him being traded from the Cubs in 84 was just recent.
Yeah, so the Cubs traded for him, and they gave up Rick Monday and Mike Garman, and they got back Bill Buckner, Jeff Albert, and Ivan De Jesus. And when they traded him to the Red Sox, they gave Bill Buckner and they got back Mike Bumley and Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah, Hall of Famer right there.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, you know, my time, I would say probably my earliest memory was he was the lone all-star for the Cubs. He was 81, 82.
81, yeah.
He won a batting title for the Cubs. He almost robbed home run number 715 from Hank Aaron.
Oh yeah, I think Len mentioned that on the broadcast today. I did not know that.
Yeah, he went up over the wall and almost took that one away. So yeah, you know, rest in peace, Bill Buckner. I mean, you know, he was a player that when, I mean, just he was a real stand up guy. And I know that he had some problems with the Cubs at the end of his career. I mean, end of his tenure with the Cubs, because the Cubs really were giving a lot more playing time to Leon Durham. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't happy about that. And I understand, but I just really loved Bill Buckner. And, you know, I remember when he had that ball go between his legs for the Red Sox, like, you know, I think that's part of the reason that I rooted for the Red Sox for a long time. Not, you know, I mean, the Cubs were my number one, but the Red Sox were my American League team. And part of it was that Bill Buckner. And when that ball went between his legs, like, I just, you know, my heart sank. You know, I just was like, this guy that I'm just a big fan of, I can't imagine what he's feeling right now. And some of the awful things people said, and you know how people can be.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And luckily there was no internet back then. Oh my goodness.
Could you imagine?
That guy would have, there was no like real sports radio or internet, because he probably just would have lost his mind. God. You know, it was basically the newspapers that you could avoid. But man, if that happened today, I can't even imagine. Like, you know, sometimes people just take everything as super personal. Like, Bill Buckner clearly didn't mean for that to happen.
No. Yeah, because I think that is what everyone remembers. You mentioned Bill Buckner. Everyone thinks of that World Series, the 1986 World Series. The other thing about that play was, is that people got to remember, if Bill Buckner makes that play, they go to extras. They already blew the save. So it wouldn't have been a difference between winning or losing. It would have been the difference between going to extra innings or, you know, losing, not winning. They already blew the save.
It's very much like Bartman. Like, it wasn't Bartman that cost him that game. You know, the shortstop, you know, it was the whole team. The shortstop booted the ball. Like, you had, you know, the Cubs as a whole, you know, gave that game away. And it wasn't even the last game of the series. Like, so it you know, Bill Buckner, everyone wants to find a scapegoat. And that was, he was the perfect candidate. And, you know, it's a shame. He was a good dude. And he was a really good Cub for, a solid chunk of time.
He played more games for the Cubs than any other team.
That I did not know.
Yeah. So, in his career, he played 2,517 games. 974 of them were as a Cub. The second most were as a Dodger, 773. The Cubs are the only team where he stepped up to the plate more than 4,000 times.
Yeah, I did look up some stats, and man, he had a lot of at-bats in a couple of those seasons.
He had over 1,000 hits as a Cub, too.
Yeah. So it was a solid career, really solid career. He was a great Cub in a time where, you know, pre-1984... there was some rough years, and he was a really good Cub, and, you know, it's sad to see him go. So, rest in peace, Bill Buckner.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess wrap this up with a little bit of White Sox talk. I mean, they really struggled this week too.
Those two wins against Houston would have built a little momentum, but they got swept by the Red Hot Twins.
So, I mean, in the first Houston game, you had Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, and Yoan Moncada combined 1-for-15 with 4 strikeouts.
Was that the game that Justin Verlander pitched and brought a no-hitter late in the game?
I can't remember if he pitched that one or if he pitched game 2 where Moncada and Eloy went combined 0-for-7 with 7 strikeouts.
To be fair to them, he looked unhittable. But yeah.
I think that was the 5-1 game. Saw,
that was it.
Where they got one hit. We saw Dylan Covey not look so hot. And there was a time where we I think we were hopeful that he could be a back of the rotation regular for the White Sox. And I just feel like, you know, that's just not something that's going to happen. I think we've seen enough of Dylan Covey to, I mean, I at least have seen enough of Dylan Covey where I'm like, no, he's a quadruple A player. You know, he's a spot starter.
I've seen a few stints of his that were okay, but yeah, as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he had a rough game here. He's had a rough season, over five ERA. You know, you luckily had a great start by Ivan Nova, which is actually surprising because the guy had went seven innings with three earned runs and in order to drop his season ERA below seven.
Yeah. And Ivan Nova is the guy where you probably care about least. He's just a veteran to fill the void. I mean, think about it. If you're a White Sox fan, you're watching these pitchers. You're watching Lucas Giolito. You're watching Reynaldo Lopez. You're probably watching Dylan Covey with a little more interest. But Ivan Nova is just a guy to fill a spot.
Oh, yeah. Him and Banuelos are just spot fillers.
Oh, Manny Banuelos. Oh,
man, he's just been rough. I mean, he had a rough start against the Twins. And I mean, everybody had a rough start against the Twins. The Twins just came in and steamrolled the White Sox.
The Twins are hitting home runs at historic rates too.
Yeah. And you know what? I argue with my friend Gary about this is he was like, Twins are good. And I'm like, this team, you look and every player on that team that's doing well is going well above their career bests. And I just can't see that as sustainable. Is you just feel like, I just feel personally, I feel like that is a team that is primed to hit a major skid. And I just don't see them competing for a World Series. I know that they're on a great run. It's just, you know, you're like, sometimes you're like, okay, well, beyond good numbers because they're young, but it's just, you've got other guys that are just hands down far and away the best season that they have ever had all at the same time. That's just not statistically probable.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much agree with you. I do think the Twins have some talented players and I think it's in their best interest to buy and to really go for it. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't try to make a bigger move for a Keuchel. Why not get Dallas Keuchel? That if there's a weakness, it's their pitching. I said that Dallas Keuchel would fit perfectly there.
I think most teams now are at the point where the draft is just a couple days away. And you, once the draft is over, you don't have to give up any, you don't have to give up your first rounder. And so why at this point, if you can, unless you're desperate and don't think you can win a bid. But even at this point, why would a Dallas Keuchel sign unless somebody just threw a dumb, you know, high offer at him when he can just wait a few more days till the draft is over and I'm sure he's going to get several contract offers.
Yeah, I'm talking more offseason, like in the offseason when they were looking to kind of boost up. I thought he would have been a perfect target at the time, but I know what you mean now, yeah.
Agreed, yeah, agreed. I don't know if the Twins thought that they were going to be at this point, this good at this point. You know, for being a big city, they're sort of a small market team financial wise, and they're usually not big spenders. And so for them to, I think they thought that they were a year away maybe before spending this money. But you know, guys have just been really hitting. And pitchers have looked, you know, some of their pitchers have looked really good and they just steamrolled the White Sox. You know, what was it? 26-5 in three games.
Wow. Yeah, that's, yeah. You know, the Twins, I think, are the only team now in the AL Central that is above 500 because Cleveland just dropped below 500.
That's a team that I knew that they were coming to the end of their run, that window, but they hit it hard.
And that's a shame because they had every opportunity to extend that window and they said, nah, we'll just keep it as it is.
Yeah.
By next year, they're going to be a bottom feeder. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I have a feeling that they're going to turn into the Tigers.
Speaking of the Tigers, that team is terrible. The Tigers, while record-wise not, might be the worst team in baseball right now.
Yeah, they're bad. They're real bad. It's a sad thing to watch because that team was dominant for a while, and now they're just the sad lump of a team.
Yeah, you know, one of my best friends from college who's from Detroit, lives in Detroit now, he's a Tigers fan. And when we were in college, our freshman year is when the last time they made the World Series in 2012. I'm sure you remember that. But even after that, they were in the, it seemed like they were in the ALCS pretty much every year. But
yeah, they're a fantastic team for a while.
Yep, you had in prime Cabrera, Victor Martinez, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer. I'm trying to think of some of the other guys on there. I know they had Jose Iglesias for a while. They had, you know, Prince Fielder. They had Prince Fielder. They had, I mean, they had such a good team. They had a farm system, and they gave these unreal contracts to these aging guys, and look where that's got them.
But the thing is the guy that gave him all those contracts, he was trying to do what we hoped that White Sox ownership would do and be like, you know what? I'm on my last years anyway, is let me just throw it all at this team and see a winner because I can't spend all this money in the rest of my life. And my family's taken care of because they own the team. Let me just throw all my free money, my personal money into this to see winners. And that's what he did. And, you know, it came back as it always does, is that eventually that those big contracts cost you at the back end of them. But, you know, he was gone. He's not going to see it. He saw them trying to win in his lifetime. And, you know, he got all of the reward and, you know, not having to go through the hardships of the repercussions of those big contracts.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something I could admire for trying, and it's not something I want to be overly critical of. It's just you see the bad effects of it. You know, it's too bad.
Did you see the White Sox had a bullpen start this week?
I heard about it. I didn't see it.
They actually was the first game against Houston, and they actually did solid. Only gave up 3 runs to Houston. You know, and it was the offense just couldn't get rolling. But that's a surprise move. And, you know, I know this team is struggling for starters, and it's just a shame because there's a lot of talent and there's a lot of reasons to be excited. And after years and years of being hard to be a White Sox fan, you've got a lot of things to hang your hat on. And it's sad that this organization is not throwing a little money out there because if they could supplement this starting pitching until guys get healthy next year and the year after, you know, get healthy next year and progress the year after to pull in here, you know, just bolster this rotation a little bit, especially in this division, is it adds to excitement. You know, if you can go, hey, we finished second to the Twins, that's not a bad place to be.
No, and I actually think the White Sox can at least finish second. I mean, considering
it's right in their grasp. And when you've got bullpen start and Dylan Covey and Banuelos, like you're throwing, you know, these guys out there, and you're just like, man, couldn't you just have like a fan contest? You know, wouldn't that be the same? Like, it's just you're throwing these guys out there that suck.
Yeah, and an unfortunate part of it is the fact that you have Rodon and Kopech hurt, but yeah, you wish you could have found little better, but.
Yeah, you know, you have those guys hurt, and Reynaldo Lopez has really regressed from last year. But damn it, if Lucas Giolito is just not rolling.
Yeah, he might be the hottest pitcher in baseball right now, or at least one of them.
Yeah, we talked about, like, all right, is anybody going to figure him out? Because he's really limiting the number of pitches. He's throwing like a bullpen guy, but for in a starting rotation. And, you know, he's like, all right, I hear what your criticisms, and let me go out there and throw a complete game four-hit shutout.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a complete 180 this season as a whole. It's pretty amazing to watch because he had absolutely no command last year, and now his command is great.
Yeah, he simplified everything. 9 strikeouts, 1 walk, no runs, 4 hits in 9 innings. That's a hell of a line.
Yeah, that's really good.
Like, you really can't ask for any better than that. And
especially,
you know, he's making guys miss. He just looks good. And, you know, I said, you know, it's one of those things is, will the league figure out, like, hey, he's only throwing pretty much 2 pitches. But at that point, you know, after how many straight starts of just dominant baseball, you know, doesn't that give you the confidence to go out there and add a 3rd pitch? And if you add a curveball into that you feel comfortable with, man, you're really just going to smash people, because if they're sitting on fastball changeup and you throw a curve in there that looks good, shit, you're going to make guys look stupid up there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he will. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, if there's one real thing to watch pitching-wise this year, it is Lucas Giolito. A lot of the eyes are on, you know, Yoan and Eloy, Jose Abreu being the veteran there. But I think Gio has turned into one of the biggest stories of the season, wouldn't you say, for the Sox?
Absolutely. And, I mean, he's been really fun to watch. And it's good because I talked about it last year, is I really like him. Like, I think he's...
I like him too.
You know, personality-wise, I really rooted for him. And it was frustrating last year that he had his struggles. And I really was hoping, and there was a lot of people saying, oh, he's done, he's washed up, you know, he's a bum. And he's really come out, and it's been great to see, because he's a good kid. And you like to see him succeed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of people you like to root for on this White Sox team. There's no real hateable guys. Abreu is a stand-up dude. You like cheering for him. Eloy is great. Moncada is great. Tim Anderson, you know, there's people, old school people might hate him for his bad flip, but man, he loves playing this game. He wants to make it exciting. Nothing wrong with that. Giolito's great. You know, it's not only is the star looking bright and the future looking bright, but there's some characters on there that you like to root for.
Which brings me to kind of something I wanted to bring up, which was the opposite of that. Have you been following this Adam Eaton, Todd Frazier stuff?
I saw a little bit of it and I was like, man, how stupid and childish. Like, all right, I get Adam Eaton is the bigger child here, but both of them just need to stop acting like little babies.
Yeah, you know, we heard over and over, to always my surprise, Adam Eaton was never liked anywhere he went. In Arizona, they just wanted to get rid of him because players couldn't stand him. And then you heard about what happened at the White Sox, and you hear more and more. And then you have Todd Frazier, you know, barking at him for no apparent reason. And then I'm thinking, shouldn't White Sox fans love this rebuild even more now that they're free of some of those weirdos? Because it brought up a lot of that 2016 team, which was just a stupid season.
It was great. Is like if you kind of dissected what other people said about Adam Eaton, and basically summed up, it's like the number of, you know, like, oh, 25 other guys would say it. And it's like, it was basically saying that Everybody hated him in that locker room. And then you had Ozzie just not mince any words. She's like, nobody likes him. Yeah. Nobody likes you, Adam Eaton.
Nobody likes him. Said it really loudly. Nobody likes
him.
Yeah,
and man, that's – and, like, I don't think Adam Eaton even cares. Like,
clearly not.
You know, and it's funny. Even when he's trying to take the high road, he just sounds like an asshole. Like, it's – you're right. Like –
I pay my mortgage.
I got two kids and a family, and I got to pay my mortgage. Like, shut up. Like,
like, when you have Ozzie Guillen saying nobody likes you on TV, you know, you're.
It's completely different. And, you know, those that last couple years of the before the teardown of the White Sox, you know, Chris Sale was being, I don't know, a giant
weird
white trash baby. And, you know, with the cutting up of the jerseys and going to the other team's locker room, trying to fight them. And like, he was being Florida, like his Florida roots are showing. And
him and, didn't him and Eaton go screaming at Kenny Williams over the whole Drake LaRoche thing? Calling him a leader, a 14-year-old kid, a leader.
That was literally the stupidest thing that I've heard in a long time.
And, you know, it was funny. Mid-season, you remember in 2016, they had the rotting corpse of Jimmy Rollins on that team. You remember that, right?
Yes. And Jimmy Rollins was like, what the fuck did I get into?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, that locker room was awful. I mean, it was just terrible.
And Jimmy Rollins was known in Philadelphia as being a real team leader.
Yes.
And he comes into this situation. He's just like, I don't know. He's just throwing his hands up. He had no words to describe it. It was so off the rails.
Yeah. If Jimmy Rollins is floored, there's a problem. So White Sox fans, be glad you don't have to deal with that crap anymore.
Yeah, you know what? It sucked those several years of the rebuild, but just hang your hat on all of the good things. Look at some of the individual performances. Sure, Eloy's batting average isn't that great, and he's going to K a lot, but man, look at some of those home runs he's hitting. Look at Giolito's performances. You've actually got a much better closer than we do on the north side.
I have no idea how much I would love Alex Colomé on the Cubs.
Yeah, and actually I was going to ask you, like, it was funny. Are there any White Sox players, starters, that you would take over the Cubs starter?
So I definitely take Alex Colomé as our closer. Position player-wise?
I would definitely take Giolito over Yu Darvish.
Right now, yeah.
I would
second bit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't take Contreras over. I'm sorry, you wouldn't take McCann over Contreras. You wouldn't take Abreu over Rizzo.
Abreu's a DH, in my opinion. He's more of a DH.
Yeah, but he you know, I just put him in there so you could have his name.
I get that.
You're not going to take Tim Anderson over Baez. You know, Yoan Moncada looks good, but you're not going to take him over Chris Bryant. You know, Jason Hayward, you're like, oh, maybe. But then you look over and you're like, oh, wait, they've just got a rotating right field position for the White Sox.
Yeah.
Here's the one. Would you take Eloy over Schwarber right now for this season only?
I think if we're looking at potential, Eloy has a much higher ceiling. But
if you're just talking from today till the end of the playoffs, whenever your season ends.
I like Schwarber may not have the numbers, but he's come up big on a couple occasions. I feel like it's a matter of time before Eloy just really breaks out. I may give slight the thing with Eloy is he doesn't have the experience. Schwarber does.
That's where my thing is like is also you need Schwarber to be a leadoff bat.
No.
Do you want Eloy leading off? No. So that's, you're right. Is if you're saying I want for the rest of their career, I'm going to say Eloy hands down. But if you're saying for this one season, for this, you know, playoff run, I'm going to say Schwarber just because he has postseason experience in multiple postseasons and come up big. And he's your leadoff guy for better or worse.
Now, if you asked me last year and Yoan Moncada was still at second, you better believe I'd take him at second.
Yeah, but right now you're going second is Addison Russell or Yomer Sanchez.
Give me Yomer Sanchez, honestly. Screw Addison Russell.
And then Lurie Garcia or Albert Almora.
I'll take Almora. As much grief as I sometimes give Almora, he's played very nicely lately. And I mean, what Lurie Garcia? He's a very replaceable player who's played decently for the Sox this year, but I don't know. I don't know if I really take Lurie Garcia or Albert Almora Jr., at least not right now.
No, but hands down, you're like, oh man, Colum A, that'd be nice to have right now.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, if you actually look at the White Sox, they have some pretty solid relievers in their pen right now. That guy Bummer, he's been really good for the most part.
Surprisingly, because they've really not had a good bullpen for several years now.
Yeah, I think their bad bullpen numbers as a whole list this year have just been mainly been inflated when like the Sox are down by a couple of runs and they have like their middle relievers in, and you know those guys aren't very good. But you know, you look at some of the other names in that pen, including Colum A, it's like, you know, you got a few good arms in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, it's nice to see that the White Sox are finally starting to, you know, build something there.
Yeah, because the last 2 years, that White Sox bullpen was just as bad as it gets. They had guys off the street, for goodness sake.
Yeah, that's all I really had for baseball, but I thought about talking about the Pete Myers resigning after how many years with the Bulls, but I figure we'll save that for next week because it's not much else to talk about there, but it's kind of funny. But I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to talk, Alex.
I wanted to talk very briefly about one thing, just get your opinion on it.
Sure.
What did you think of the top 10 for all-time Bears?
You know, I didn't see who the top 10 was. I haven't seen it. I've been following a little bit. I'm guessing number one, Walter Payton.
Yes.
Which I'm fine with. Who was the rest of the top 10?
I got to find the actual list. The one thing that really stuck out to me and a lot of other people, Brian Urlacher didn't make the top 10. And I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely top 10. If you look at, I don't know how much you are into like AV value for football, like on Football Reference.
I honestly, with this kind of list, I would probably do more eyeball, just kind of what the impact was. And Walter Payton is arguably, Walter Payton's not only as a football player, but as a person, just A+, and arguably the best running back in football history. It's hard to put him not number one. So, okay, number one, perfect. Dick Butkus.
He was in the top five, I believe.
Yeah. And you know, that's a no brainer.
I think Bronco was in top five.
Yeah. See, it's hard cause I didn't well before my time.
And the game was so different.
Yeah. It was such a different game. It's hard to put him up there. Gale Sayers. The years he did play was spectacular, but it was such a short career. It's like six seasons. You know, I could see a Dan Hampton being above Urlacher.
Yeah, I think he was in the top. I'm trying to find the list.
is because A, he won a Super Bowl, and B, he's a Hall of Famer, and C, he played up and down the line. He played every defensive line position at a Pro Bowl level, not an alternate Pro Bowler, he actually was a legitimate Pro Bowler at every single defensive line position. So I could see that. Let's see who else.
Do you want to hear the top five that they officially said?
Yes.
Number one was Peyton. Number two was Butkus. Number three was Bronco. Number four was Sid Luckman. Number five was Gale Sayers. I think
Sid Luckman.
I agree. I think Sid Luckman's spot should go to Singletary.
I would put Urlacher ahead of Singletary.
They're like right next to each other.
Both play. And this is not a knock on Mike Singletary, but I think Mike Singletary was made better by his defense, and not a knock on him. He was a fantastic football player, but I think he was made better by his defense, and it took him a while to get to the point where he was. If you hear some of the things that that Buddy Ryan said about him, just awful things. If you dig some interviews, I think Mike Singletary even talked about it. Just some of the awful things that Buddy Ryan said to him about not being able to play football. And Buddy's response was, "I believed in him. I just needed to figure out a way to get it out of him." But it took somebody to really push him to get there. And Urlacher, I think, made everybody around him better. And so I would say Urlacher better than Singletary. Bronco Nagurski, good, different era. Sid Luckman, I'm going to throw this out there, is other than the record that, the team record with the Sid Luckman era, is Jay Cutler was a better quarterback. And
yeah.
And Jay was way down there on that list, like 80th or something.
He was 85th.
Yeah. So he was low on that list. So Sid Luckman shouldn't be that high. Should a long snapper be that high on a list? Was he in the top 30? Patrick Manley. Should a long snapper be on this list? No. I get he played for a long time and he was very good at what he did, but he's a long snapper.
Right.
There were some weird things on the list. But when you come down to it, this is not a Detroit Lions where they've got a long track record of shitty football. This is an original marquee, franchise that has a lot of Hall of Famers, a lot of championships under their belt, and has had a lot of good players over a long time. And sometimes it's just, if you are trying to make this list, it gets a little hard, and I can see sometimes when you're in the weeds of putting this list together, that when you step back to look at your final result, it may not look as pretty as you thought it did when you were in the thick of things. And, and it's one of those things is to go back and try to fix what doesn't look pretty from far away. You can make it look worse. I can't think of I can't think of a way to make a top 100 list of Chicago Bears and not have somebody gripe about it.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's impossible because you're talking about players in a game that has evolved so much. I mean, you look at the 30s and 40s, football was like almost nothing like it is today. A very different game, but you got to also factor in the significance. Bronco Nagurski played in such a different era, but Bronco Nagurski, in terms of Bears history, is one of the most significant players of this franchise. And in case you're wondering who the top 10 are before the top five, Danny Fortman's number 10. Number 9 is Doug Atkins. Number 8 is Bulldog Turner. Number 7 is Bill George. And number 6 is Ditka. And Richard Dent, Jimbo Covert, and Dan Hampton are right on the outside of the top 10. 14th is Brian Urlacher. I think that's crazy to have Brian Urlacher that low.
It's crazy that Dan Hampton is that low. It's crazy Brian Urlacher is that low.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I think Mike Ditka was fantastic, but he's a tight end. Why is a tight end that high? You have to sort of look at the position. I mean, are you going to be like, oh, Kevin Butler should be on this list. Robbie Gould should be on this list. No, you sort of have to, it should be what position is most important and who was the best players at those positions. I mean, you know, running back, this is a team that is known for middle linebackers and running backs. So yeah, running back number one, you know, you have a history of middle linebackers. Maybe some more of them should be in the top 10. You know, you've got to look at this list too, is who is actually consuming this list. Is, you know, vast majority of people looking at this list weren't alive when Bronco Nagurski played.
No.
Maybe you lean on a little bit of recency bias as well and go, you know what, is I'm going to put somebody, you know, that's maybe not as good, a little higher on this list because the people consuming this list, this is who they've seen
play.
I don't think
there are many people alive today that saw Bronco Nagurski in his prime.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Atkins, before most of those guys in the top 10 were before my time. I mean, you know, Walter Payton is right in my wheelhouse. You know, I remember, you know, just idolizing him. I remember when he died, you know, it was one of the last times I can remember where I just burst into tears. And, you know, but Dick Butkus is not, I never saw him play live. It was well before my time, but it was at least the era before me. So, I at least, you know, when you're like, oh, look at how good the Bears are. And you're like, well, throw back to the 85. And so it's a lot of hype about that. Well, you're like, all right, well, you're talking about these guys from the 85 Bears. And you're like, back then you were like, oh, well, Dick Butkus, you know, oh, Walter Payton's good. Gale Sayers. And so you got to see a lot more and hear a lot more and read a lot more about their era because, that was the previous era. So, you know, people that are younger don't have that because, you know, their frame of reference in the previous era is the 85 team. You know, that gets bandied about. So,
and that was before my time. So I didn't even see Walter Payton play when he died in 1999. I was like 5 years old.
Yeah. And so, you know, but like in your case, like you're like, okay, I see how good this Bears team is. And everyone's like, well, 85 Bears. So for you, you're like, okay, I have a frame of reference of what the Chicago Bears, even though it wasn't my era, I at least you're like, I know who these players are because they talk about them in context of the people I'm watching. And that was sort of what happened with me with Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus. But then you've got Bronco Nagurski is, you know, nobody was talking about that because there was multiple Hall of Fame running backs or really good running backs between Walter Payton, my era, and Bronco Nagurski. Is, you know, you're not going to leapfrog talking about a Gale Sayers. And so it's those players like my dad is 80 years old. For him, some of those old guys would be like, oh yeah, hey, I remember those guys. But, you know, he doesn't even remember clearly because there's been so many years of watching football that have, you know, well, I've seen all these other guys play. And he's not, this list is not really for him either. You know, this list is really being talked about people actively listening to sports radio. And that's males age 18 to, you know, 50 probably.
Lots of guys named Bab.
Yeah, lots of guys named Bab. But that's like the age range you're looking at. And so I would, if I was putting this list together, I would say, hey, listen, if I have a choice between a guy that this list is in their wheelhouse is for, and they've seen them and they know them versus a guy that was, you know, dead by the time they were born. I'm going to lean on the guy that they've seen.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, I was going back to the whole value thing, the one of the metrics on Football Reference, and, you know, again, take this as you will, it goes back to 1960, but, you know, Brian Urlacher is third all time on valued players listed on Football Reference. And think about this. Look, we had some very good players the past two decades. We had Peanut Tillman. We had Devin Hester. We had Lance Briggs. But can you name a player that was anywhere close to the level of dominance as Brian Urlacher?
No, you can't. And it's, you know, it's weird. It's like, I haven't looked close enough to this list. I don't know if they put a preface on there of how they judge these players, you know, because is it stats versus their counterparts in that era? I don't know, because if you're like the top 100 Chicago Bears, is Devin Hester on this list? Devin Hester should be pretty darn high, because the years he played with them,
I know he's on the list. I just don't know where.
In that time, that era, what he did for the Bears was just, it's unreal. It's unreal. The things that he did in that period of the Chicago Bear as a kick returner. Sure, he sucked as a cornerback and he sucked as a wide receiver. And you probably don't remember he playing cornerback. But that as a kick and punt returner, he was easily, hands down, the greatest kick and punt returner in NFL history. And it was magical to watch. I mean, if you're ever confused by it, opening kickoff of the Super Bowl against the Indianapolis Colts, is watch the crowd when that ball gets kicked to Devin Hester. Watch the crowd's reaction and the flashes of cameras going off. There was sheer unadulterated excitement to watch Devin Hester.
Oh yeah. It was. I mean, you could go to any stadium and the crowd, you could feel the energy in the crowd when the ball went to Devin Hester. You don't see that with a lot of kick returners, especially not today, but with Devin Hester, it was something different. And every time the Bears were playing, every time there was a punter kick return to Hester, or just even with his vicinity, you knew that they would mention Devin Hester. The announcers were like, well, Devin Hester waiting back there. They'd always mention him because of how important he was to the game.
Yeah. And you know, back to this list is Jay Cutler statistically is the best quarterback in the history of this franchise. And which is that's a sad state of affairs. But to have a list of your top 100 players in 100-year history of the team, and the best quarterback statistically you ever had is 85th.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he deserves to be a little higher.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he should be top 10, is because he absolutely does not deserve that. Is there was some bad football being played in there, but you know, it's hard. This is a hard list to make. This is a real hard list to make. I mean, this is a hard list, I think, to make if you just go the past 50 years, because there's some really fantastic players that, you know, two names come to mind that did not get the recognition from the league that they deserved, but in Chicago, we know how special they were. Number one, Charles Tillman.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, Gary Fenzik. Those two guys, I think, should be Hall of Famers, and they did not get the recognition that they deserved in the eyes of the national media and the rest of the league. And I thought both players were just absolutely fantastic football players.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I loved Peanut Tillman so much. He was one of my absolute favorites, and the Peanut Punch was one of my favorite things to watch. And my favorite Peanut Tillman highlight of all time is when he battled Randy Moss for that throw in the end zone and he just took it away from one of the best receivers of all time. Like it was nothing. You remember that.
Arguably the best wide receiver of all
time. Yes, arguably the best.
Yeah, so it's, I remember that. I loved Peanut Tillman. And I just always thought it was sad is when it came time for him, his year of the first year of eligibility for the Hall of Fame. And I just looked, I'm like, there is absolutely 0% chance Charles Tillman is going to make the Hall of Fame. And he really should at least have serious consideration because he was a fantastic football player. And, you know, Gary Fenzik the same way as Fenzik. If I would have loved for the Hall of Fame voters to explain to Buddy Ryan in person why Gary Fenzik wasn't a Hall of Famer.
I think a lot of people would.
I would love you probably would have had a fist fight because you asked Buddy Ryan, you asked Mike Ditka, is that man a Hall of Famer? And both flat out will tell you absolutely without a doubt lock. And you know, it's so both of those guys shoot up the list for me. And even though they're not national names. So I'll take a look at this list. I'll probably have some more thoughts on it. I've been peeking at it a little bit here and there as it came up, but I didn't see the top list, and I was kind of anxious to see what happened. And I gave you my initial thoughts. I'm going to look at it next week, and you know, I'll talk a little bit more about my thoughts and see if I can rearrange it a little bit that to make me happier.
Yeah, there you go.
Was there anything else you wanted to discuss?
No, I'm pretty good.
All right. Well, thanks everybody so much for listening to the show. Please make sure you hit subscribe, however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or the TuneIn app. Make sure you hit or you share this podcast with your friends that like Chicago sports. That's how we grow the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please follow us on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. And again, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go Bears.